in Kazakhstan. Mr. Sefta has never addressed myself to the Tate Kaskorach. I never spoke about him. But I did speak about many of our biblical heroes. Abraham, the patriarchs, Moshe, Aaron, Joseph. I have a series of drushes about Mechirat Yosef. However, I was not attracted by the figure of Kerach. Lately, just simply by studying the Ramban, I realized that this Kerach story was not just a simple event. It was more than that. And actually, the Kerach story of the conquerors of Moses had great relevance to our times. Many of the complaints we hear now with reference to Orthodox and tradition of the Rosh Barber, echo actually on the complaints by Korach. Tonight I want to address myself to this topic, particularly to two arguments which Korach advanced against Moses, and I'll try to analyze them in light of modern events, modern philosophy. Because I believe that those two arguments are very important as far as we are concerned. The Korach rebellion was a unique event. Prior to that event, the people complained, protested, murmured spontaneously, always in response to a physical need. They were confronted with, or to biological pressure they suffered from, such as hunger, thirst, making fear of an enemy, of a fiend, be it Amalek, be it the serpent, and be it simply the wilderness itself. Because primitive man is afraid not only of living beings, but even of any phenomenon. Let me just read a few psukim. Vayisu bnei Yisroel esenehem, bnei Mitzrayim nisei achareyem, vayiru meit vayitzaku. The children of Israel lifted their eyes and they beheld the Egyptians marching after them. And they were so afraid, and the sons of Israel cried. Cried in the sense, it's not in the colloquial, it's called colloquial cry, it means they protested. Royal in Soek Yitzhakola, the meaning of cry, was broadcast. Tzoko in Hebrew is basically broadcast. Simply, fear prompted their protest. Then we read in the Torah, Vayoveyo Morosa, Vayoyochu Vishtismai Memoro, Kimorinei, Vayoleinu Omar Misha Leimer, Manishti. And when they came to Mara, they could not drink of the waters of Mara, for they were bitter, and the people murmured against Moses. Yet, what prompted their protest? Thirst. Vayreinu kol adazne Yisroel al meishir al haron damid bo vayim raleim ne Yisroel, miyiteim lana. And the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses. When he sat by the flesh pots, and when he did eat bread to satisfaction, we were hungry. A hungry person is an angry person. An angry person is not a silent person, but very loud. Vayisu kol adazne Yisroel, vayachanu birfidim, veimayim lifteis, vohom, vayore vohom mimoshe, vayimru, kumonu mayim, v'nishte. And the congregation journeyed, and encamped in Rephidim, and there was no water for the people to drink. Mm-hmm. Therefore, the people did quarrel with Moses and said, give us water that we may drink. There were no political disagreements with Moses or ideological controversies, the well-known rebellions. There was just protest, complaints, and calls. And all those protests, complaints, and calls were consequences of this
conflict.
We were subjected to the first and second year of this journey. We wanted water, we wanted food, we were afraid, we protested. Even the Golden Calf episode, the episode of Eagle Reserve, was not precipitated by idolatrous ideas that corroded the moral fiber and influenced the philosophy of the people. No, not at all. The Golden Calf was precipitated by the primitive instinctual horror that befalls the lost sheep in the wilderness. In wide and open spaces. It was a spontaneous reaction to the primordial terror of the jungle. They were lost in the jungle. They thought Moses will never come back. And without Moses, what can they do? How can they survive in the jungle? It is the fear, the instinctual horror, the instinctual terror and horror which strikes the lost sheep, then the latter realizes that it has separated itself from the herd, from the flock. Vayikoyelo omalai, kumaseilonu elohim, kizeu ish Moshe, liyodanu me'oyele. And the people assembled unto Aaron and said, make us a God who shall go before us. Because we lost Moses. In a word, all the previous calls were unorganized, unplanned. Reactions, unplanned, spontaneous reactions to situations that they could not be confronted, that they had to confront, and they did not know how to confront such situations. They were generated, basically, the previous calls, by a mob mentality, which gets easily excited, but also regains easily its equilibrium. The Korach controversy was of a totally different character. Of a totally different character. The rebellion was not due to ungratified physical desires, such as hunger and thirst, not at all. Second, the crowd was not involved at all. The masses were not involved at all. The mob, which demanded from Aaron should make them a god, the arm which protested in the feeding, they are thirsty, they want water, the arm which wanted to stone Moses and Aaron during the Meraglim episode was not involved at all. The mob did not participate in the anti-Moses campaign, as they call it. Only individuals. The leadership consisted of several individuals. The followers, few hundred most. Hamishim Masayinish, Makhtir actors. All individuals, mostly of the intellectual elite, of the aristocracy, who were involved. The Tere tells us, the CEO, who remained, Anshe Shein. Princes of the congregation called into the assembly man of name. This was a rebellion. Not just a quarrel, a rebellion. An organized movement, well planned and painstakingly prepared. In short, we may speak, we should use a colloquial legal term, of a Korach conspiracy. There was no conspiracy as far as the episode of the miracle was concerned. No conspiracy. Everything was spontaneous, unorganized, unplanned. The immediate reaction to fear, to the story about the giants. But in Korach it was a conspiracy, premeditated and carefully thought out. It was a real rebellion. Apparently, if we should trace, the history of that rebellion, what psychologically prompted it, what is the etiology of that rebellion, I believe we should follow the Ramban. The Ramban is excellent in this regard. Whatever I say here, about the background, you may find the Ramban if you study the Ramban carefully. Apparently, Korach's enmity was incurred by Moshe at the time of the elevation of Aaron to the high priesthood, Rashi quoted to Melrash, the high priesthood and the appointment of the Levites as mere servants in the sanctuary of God. He didn't like it. However, but this happened a year before. However, Korach, in spite of the fact that he was angry and Moshe incurred his enmity, did not attempt to come out publicly against Moshe, since he understood very well that the people, notwithstanding minor incidents, were devoted and loyal to their great leader, and that any attempt to unseat Moshe would be met with anger and derision. You wait, patiently waited for an opportunity, for an event that will somehow undermine Moses' position and his popularity. You waited for what of it? He hated Moshe. He nursed this hatred, and he was hoping that the opportune moment will arrive. And, as a matter of fact, the opportune moment did arrive sooner than Korach anticipated. The miracle in Israel. Perhaps this was the most tragic incident in Moshe's life. The Meraglim incident episode and the subsequent decree by the Almighty that all adults die in the desert was a hard blow to Moses' prestige in the eyes of the crowd. For a short while, he lost the grip over the crowd. He lost his sympathy. Moses promised on behalf of the Almighty. The slaves in Egypt, before they left Egypt, while they were still busy building barracks and fortresses for Pharaoh, he promised those slaves that they will enter into the promised land, into a land flowing with honey, with milk and honey. And they'll enter the land a short time after the departure from Egypt. Indeed, when we read Balisfa, they were ready to invade the Negev the second year after following the Exodus. As it is related to us in Numbers 10:29, Vayimer Moshe, Rechivo Beruel Amidioni, Chesen Nation, Noisim Anachno Lamokin, Hashorom Radishem, Esei Eten Lochem, Lecho Etono. We are journeying to the place which the Eternal said, I shall give to you. Come down with us. What place was Moshe talking about? The promised land. Were ready to enter. Of course, they wouldn't have entered Eretz Israel from the east, but from the left, from the south. Suddenly, like the lightning out of a clear blue sky, they're staying in the wilderness, who was extended for 39 more years. Suddenly, all the hopes, all the dreams. But soon, we'll invade the land flowing with milk and honey. But it's dissipated, shattered. No land, no conquest, no rivers of milk and honey, no realization of the promised Vavesi. We were inside. It became a reality, suddenly became a vision. Many, many bleak and dreary years will have to pass before the soil will set its foot on the soil of Canaan, the promised land. Where is Moses' pledge? We ask each other. And Terach Light, he asked those questions. Those questions were very encouraging to
Terach.
You realize the time has arrived.
The air conditioning work automatically here, or what?
Where is Moses' pledge? Where is his clairvoyance? Where is his prescience? Where is his prophecy?
I think we'll have to have it on from time to time.
Then people used to talk with each other, how will it be possible to endure so much hardship in that dreary wilderness?
Okay, I have some
39, 40 years. The people complained, but it was a complaint of hopelessness. Moses' popularity was at the low ebb. Now, Terach thought, the time has arrived. And I may reveal my plans to other people against whom Moshe discriminated. And Terach started to recruit disgruntled and frustrated people and organized a formidable opposition to Moshe. More or less, the Ramban interprets it. Because when the Ibn Ezra said that the incident of Korach happened immediately after the construction of the Mishkan, Ramban said, no. It happened after the Meraglim episode. And that the Ramban is right and the Ibn Ezra is wrong, we have proof, ample proof on the Pesukim. What did Dosson Vaviron tell Moshe when he sent for them and invited them to come over? Aflei aleret zovas cholo vudvosh aveyisonu vatiken lonu nachlasote vekerem. You didn't bring us into the land of honey and milk, and you did not give us a share in that land. It means your promise did not come true. Interesting is the word vayikach. The word vayikach was interpreted by Rashi in two ways. One way, it's a very obscure word. I mean, the semantics of the word is very obscure. In one way, Rashi says, Lokach es atzmei lezat echot, li es nechlat mitecho edo, le'ere rala kohuna. Let me translate English, but the meaning is obscure. he betook himself. On one side, it is the intention of you of separating himself from the community so that he may raise a protest regarding the priesthood. It's a verbal translation of Rashi. What Rashi means, Terach made the final in. Until Terach, no one dared to impugn Moshe's father. Right, people were angry, so they said, give us water, give us food. We remember the fresh parts of Egypt. Yeah. But they stood in awe before Moshe. Terach was the first one. Mokach HaSatzman. He dared, for the first time, to separate himself from the community which was committed to Moshe, revered Moshe, loved him, in spite of everything, and was loyal to him. He was the first one. I believe that Lokach HaSatzmei, he took himself, means something else. He dedicated himself completely to that task. By Yikach Terach as Atzmei, he dedicated himself to this task. There was only one goal in Terach's life, one goal. He was ready to sacrifice his life in order to achieve that goal. Namely what? To unseat Moshe, to demote Moshe. He dedicated his whole self to this diabolical plan of undermining Moses' exalted position within the community. Vayikach means he committed himself totally to the implementation of that plan. However, it was an individual affair. It did not let in any evidence. He decided he hated Moses. He did not betray his hatred. He did not disclose to anybody. He waited. At the beginning, he did not reveal anything to the prospective conspirators. Yet, at the very instant the divine decree condemning the Jews to 40-year sojourn in the wilderness was announced, Terach immediately revealed his plans to Dothan Ve'aviron because he thought that the golden opportunity has offered itself. And Rashi has another pshat of Vayikach. Vayikach Moshach Roshei Sanhedroes Shebohem Bidvorim. First he decided himself to fight against Moses, to defeat Moses, to remove him from the historical scene. Next, but he had no courage to reveal the plan to others. But following the incident with the Meraglim, his Moshach Roshei Sanhedroes, he attracted the chiefs of the Sanhedrin, of the court, by fine words, clever words, intelligent words. Chazal say, Terach Shepikeach Royal. Terach was a clever, intelligent man. How did Chazal know about it? Because he made money, so he was a rich man, all right. Now, rich man is not always a rich man, a clever man, intelligent man. I know many stupid people who are rich, because his arguments, we'll analyze his arguments, are indicative of inner intelligence. So even the Rosh Sanhedrin, the heads of the court, he convinced that righteousness is an insight. And Rashi says, his fine words, he began to conspire. Now the conspiracy began. He began to conspire, to criticize, to attack, and to ridicule Moses. Terach used all the weapons of the arsenal of the philosophy of conspiracy. To some, in conversation with some, he was serious. In conversation with others, he was humorous, sarcastic. In conversation with some,
played the role of the prosecutor. In his conversation with others, he was the champion of justice. He was very capable. And he involved, interestingly, is the Bnei Reuven. So Rash says, why Bnei Reuven? Why the tribe of Reuven became involved so easily in the conspiracy? So Rash says, Elo Rosh HaVel Ishreinet. Next door neighbor of Terach. So he met Terach too often, too many times. Terach succeeded in convincing. The Ramban already mentions it. That Bnei Reuven had also a grudge against Moshe, against Jacob, but he couldn't do anything to Jacob. So he transferred the grudge to Moshe, because Reuven was deprived of the Chere, of Kehune and Levi and Malchus. They also nursed a grudge against Moshe. They also felt hurt, because Moses took away the prayer from them, the privilege of Malchus and Kehune and Levi. However, any conspiracy or organized movement, in order to succeed, any rebellion, in order to make headway, no matter how egotistically this rebellion is motivated, in order to make headway, to succeed, must develop an ideology. If it's a spontaneous reaction, if two people quarrel, there is no need to develop a philosophy or to quarrel on behalf of ideas, to represent ideas. But if Korach planned the movement, it was a movement, it was a conspiracy, it was an anti-Moses movement. So such a movement cannot exist, cannot succeed, without developing the proper ideology. A motto, any movement must have a motto. A motto is indispensable. And Korach indeed did provide the philosophy of the rebellion. And the theory is interested to tell us not only about the facts, the events that transpired, but also about the ideology which Korach formulated. And simply, I believe, the parsha is out to tell us the distinction or the difference between the Moshe's approach and Korach's approach to certain matters. Let us concentrate. What would you say? How many arguments did Korach employ? How many arguments, ideological arguments, in order to justify his attitude, his stand? How many? What would you say? How many? I believe there was only one argument. It branched out later in several. But I'm going to investigate basically I'm going to investigate two arguments here. First, the argument which the tale has related at the very beginning of the story. And second, an argument which the Torah has not mentioned at all, but somehow, in a mysterious way, we don't know how, Chazal introduced the argument you know about the Torah. Let us concentrate first upon the most potent of all arguments that Korach advanced against Moses, namely, with the argument which the Torah has stated at the very beginning of the story. Vayikoalu al Moshe v'al Aaron, vayemru haleihem rav lochem, ticholeido kulom gdeishim, ubeseichom Hashem, v'lomot isnasu Alcala de Shem. You've gone too far, for all the community is holy, all of them are holy, and the Lord is in their midst. Why then do you raise yourselves above the congregation of the Lord? It is a solid argument. Thus, the problem of leadership and exercise of power was raised. Terah thought, apparently, that Moshe seized power illegitimately. He usurped power. That Moses is a usurpator. He impugned Moses' authority. He challenged Moses' authority. And the basis of this challenge was very simple. And at first glance, quite logical. No one can deny, Korach's assertion that the whole community is holy. Is it a lie? Is it a lie what Korach says? Call it a prolongation. And that every Jew possesses intrinsic sanctity and inner charismatic quality, elevating him above others. No one can deny it. This is the very essence of Kriyas Yisrael. As far as covenantal choiceness and holiness are concerned, I mean, Kedushas Yisrael, there is no distinction. There was no distinction between Moses and the woodchopper, between Moses and the wood and the water drawer. Not at all. No matter how simple the woodchopper is, and no matter how great in spirit Moshe was. Hence, Terah asked, and the question merits an answer, what right did Moses or Aaron have to lead, to guide, to rule? It is the age-old or millennia-old question pertaining to the principle of equality of man versus election and singling out of an individual. Let us analyze this argument. Terah was wrong, an absolute postulate. Terah was wrong because he was unaware of the twofold character of the Kedushas Yisrael. Had he known the mystery of the dual, the Tuse idea, He would not have advanced the argument. What is this twofold, the two-fold idea? What am I referring to? And here I must introduce a Rashi in Deuteronomy in Dvorim. I have the Rashi mentioned once in my Shuvah Shurim, but however I have interpreted the Rashi quite differently than I'm going to do tonight. So I'm not plagiarizing myself. Ki am kodesh atola de shem rekecho. A pasuk in Re'e. Ubecho bochar ad shem. Li Yisrael le'am zgulo. Rashi adds a few words. Ki am kodesh ato v'dushas atzmecho me'avisecho. Ve'eid b'cho bochar ad shem. Liyos leile amzgulo. Very cryptic, Rashi. Kiyam kodeshato. Because Rashi apparently could not understand why the Torah did duplication in the pasuk. The Torah said, Kiyam kodeshato la Hashem lekecho, Why does the Torah have to continue to say, Uberchot Bocharad Hashem, Lies Leila Amzgulo? Rashi couldn't understand it. So Rashi said, the Torah has formulated here two ideas of Kedusha. Ki Am Kodesh Ato, Kedushas Atzmecho Ma'aviseho, Ve'yit, Moreover, Uberchot Bocharad Hashem Alekecho. Let me just translate to English. Thou art holy, your holiness comes to you from your fathers. Kedushas Atzmecho, Me'aviseho. Ve'yit, Bechor Bochar. But in addition to that Kedusha, the Lord has chosen thee to be a cherished people unto himself. In other words, Rashi apparently thought that there is a twofold idea of Kedushas Israel. First, the community as a whole is holy, as an entity. Many times in my lectures, I try to simply put across the idea that Knesset Israel is not just a herd, not just a crowd, not just a conglomerate of people, not just a multitude of souls, but it is individuality, it's an entity. It is a personality, a living personality. Knesset Israel as a whole. First, the community for which we have the most beautiful term, Knesset Israel, Ramban. Ramban speaks about that term in Parshas Chayitzor, the most beautiful term. Necessary, the community as a whole is holy. This Kedusha of the community, I mean the covenantal community, is inherited from our ancestors. In other words, there is a genetic code of Kedusha. You know what the genetic code is? So we think genetic, biological, all of these in terms of a biological genetic code. Rashi knew of another genetic code of Kedusha, which is transmitted most probably through the genes. Or transmitted to the soul, I don't care. Yeah. But it means it is a genetic code of Kedusha. Otherwise you cannot speak of inheritance. And that's the reason that if a baby is born to a Jewish mother, willy-nilly the baby is considered Jewish. This is Kiram Kodesh Atol Ladeshemarka. The baby is a member of the community. The community bestows Kedusha on the baby. This Kedusha is inherited from our forefathers. The community is consecrated as a unitary entity, as a whole. The individual, in order to lay claim to Kedusha, must draw upon the resources of Kedusha available to the community. I am holy because I belong to a community. I am united with a community. I am affiliated with a community. And that community happens to be holy, as a whole. So if the whole is holy, if the parts comprising the whole are also endowed with sanctity. The Kedusha, this Kedusha, Kiyam, as it says, Kiyam Kodesh, Atola Deshem Melekecha. You are holy as a what? As a people, as a nation, as a community. You know what Am means in Hebrew. Am in Hebrew means Im, together. By being together, you are holy. It's not a separate holiness. It's not individual holiness. It's not a personal holiness. It's a together holiness. This Kedusha is not a personal, intimate, but a universal, community-rooted, and community nourished and centered Kedusha. I am holy because I am a child of a people who inherited Kedusha from its progenitors. In light of this theory, we establish, or this theory establishes, the supremacy of what? Of community over individual. You know, it's no controversy among philosophers. Whom should supremacy be assigned? The individual over the community, or the community over the individual? You know very well the American social philosophy, since the days of Jefferson, has clung stubbornly to the idea that the individual reigns supreme. But however, from the viewpoint of the Amkodish after Ladishem Rekeho, seeing this controversy from the viewpoint of Amkodish after Shem Rekeho, we may say that the others did not agree with Jefferson. For the French encyclopedist philosophers of the Age of Reason, Montesquieu, so on and so forth. It has established the supremacy of the community over the individual. The community is of primary. The individual is of secondary significance. Again, the community is placed above the individual person. As a matter of fact, Marxism, actually, subscribes to this theory, that the community is above the individual. You are consecrated to me as a people, as a nation, as a community. The individual Kedusha is derived from that of the community. Hence, all Kedushot are commensurate and not equal. If the individual derives his Kedusha from the community, so Moshe derived as much Kedusha from the community as the woodcharder did. Here justice prevails. Here is an absolute democratic approach to the partition of Kedusha. There is no differentiation of Kedusha from the viewpoint at the Amkodesh at the Ladishem Rekeho. However, Yehadus was not too happy with that. Not satisfied with this social aspect of Kedusha. Because this aspect, if accepted as the only source of Kedusha, if the community is the only source of Kedusha, then the individual would be deprived of his creative role, of his individual initiative, of his originality and uniqueness. If there is one Kedusha, and only one, rooted in the community, and all individuals receive share per share alike, then the genius cannot be created. The authentic person cannot develop into a great manik, because there is the partition of the duchess, alike is share. To share life. Hence the Torah says that in addition to the community Kedusha, Amkodesh Ato Ladishem Rekeho, there is another resource of Kedusha. Where is this resource of Kedusha to be found? In the individual. The individual must discover in himself this resource of Kedusha. The Kedusha which the individual detects in the inner recesses of his personality, he is already personalistic, single, unique. He is Kedusha. No one has the Kedusha like his. There is no share. Individual vision cannot be shared with somebody else. It's mine, completely mine. Exclusively mine. I could paraphrase the Mama Chazal, the Shem Shepard Sufayim Shal Neodom, Mishunim Zeneze, Kar Beyeseyem. I could paraphrase and say, the Shem Shedeyeseyem Shal Neodom, Mishunis Zemizuru, Kach Gdushiseyem Mishunis. From this viewpoint, the community derives what? Kedusha from the individual. The Kedusha Selom is integrated of the countless Kedusha experiences of the individual members of that community. Just the reverse of the previous question. The single person sanctified the community. How beautifully did the Torah state, of course you are holy because you are a member of a holy nation, because you are a particle or a component part of a great holy community. But at the same time, Thee has the Lord chosen to form a treasured people. There is a separate Kedusha attached to thee as an individual, as a single person. Ubechor bocha ad Hashem, lios, what do you mean lios? Ubechor if the Torah addresses itself to the individual, so how will you say it in English? Ubechor bocha ad Hashem, and God has charged thee with the mission. What? Lios, what do you mean lios? To form, to create an treasured people. Before, the people precede the individual. Now, the individual precedes the people. And thee has the Lord chosen to fulfill a mission. Namely, what mission? Leos, to form or to create or to organize an Amzgulo. Leo says the connotation in this context of forming, constituting, or creating an Amzgulo. It is obvious that as far as the Pchiras Yechidim is concerned, as far as the election of the individuals is concerned, the endowments cannot be equal. Each individual receives an endowment which what? Which is, reflects the greatness of his personality. The individual Kedusha experiences are incommensurate and completely proportionate to the individual's involvement, dedication, and to the individual's depth and sweep. The Kedusha is an expression of his greatness. And not all people are alike as far as greatness is concerned. The statement by Korach, Kicholo Eido Kulam Gdeshim, is correct as long as we are speaking of the community Rutek Kedusha. Inherited from our ancestors. Moses was born in the Jewish community, and the baby of a slave was born in the Jewish community. They received share and share alike. Their shares in the endowment of sanctity were equal. However, when we shift our attention from the social aspect to the individual aspect of Kedusha, the whole idea of equality turns into an absurdity. Kirach said, Kicholo Eido Kulom Gdeshim, Uviseicho Madishem. He emphasized the term Eido. The words Kicholo Eido should be translated as the entirety of the congregation, the whole of the congregation, is the source of Dushe. However, he forgot that there is another aspect of Dushe, the private, individual one. From that standpoint, from the standpoint of Kiyam Kodesh, Ator HaShem LeKerov, Korach's argument would have been a solid one. Yet under the aspect, Ubechol Bochar Ad HaShem LeKerov. So you have to admit that Priras Meshe is above and beyond the Priras of the wood chapel or the world of water. Interesting is Meshe says that. What did Meshe answer here? Beker v'yeda ad HaShem es ha-shalei v'es ha-kodesh v'yitzireof v'es ha-shal yischar v'y Jacques v'yitzireof. It's a cryptic, mysterious answer. Come morning, the Lord will make known who is his and who is holy, and will grant him access to himself. He will grant access to the one he has chosen. Moses speaks not of a congregation. Terach speaks of a congregation. Terach speaks of a congregation. The whole is holy. The part derives its Kedusha from the whole. Kedusha is transmitted by the whole to its component part. Meshe speaks. The Yeda Adishem Mesa Shalei. He speaks about private persons. Moses speaks not of a congregation, but of an individual. Almost the same terms that the Torah speaks in Re'eh. From that viewpoint you are right. But there's another viewpoint of vision. And as far as Prire is concerned, individual Prire, personalistic Prire is concerned, there is a difference between individual and individual. Interesting, Mace says Beta. Come morning, and the Lord will make known. You know very well what Radak, Ramban, Ibn Ezra, Gaon, there's not a single Mefarish which has omitted this explanation. Beta in Hebrew, according to the medieval grammarians, has the connotation of discriminating. Differentiating, le yuchal le bakir, bein ben asnua le ben ahuva le ben asnua, or le yuchal le bakir, bein triv l'ra. The differentiating between individual forms, beta means the period of recognition, and this is not, I would say, drush, homiletics. That interpretation was advanced by the Radak, by the Ramban, by the Nezra, by the greatest grammarians of the Middle Ages. Beta means the period of recognition, identification of things, events, and people. Erev, in contradistinction, is the time of monotony, uniformity. Erev, we say the Radak, is like Arev, Ta'avuvis, mixture, merger, oneness. The time of apprehension, Erev is the time of apprehending the surroundings as one amorphous, formless mass. When all tzurot, all forms, all individuals merge into one homogeneous black reality. In the darkness, what do you see? Just a black reality, a black something. Korach, Moshe said to him, your concept of Dushe is identical with the Erev, with the bleakness of an autumnal night whose darkness and drearness envelops everything. All you see is one piece of formless reality called Eido, called it. You don't see individuals. Your Dushe is Erev. dance a tartouche. Is limited, what Aristotle used to call, to the hile, to some amorphous mass, what the medieval philosophers call chimerae iuli, to the primordial mixture, a leveling off of specific individual traits. Of course, from the viewpoint of Erev, your argument is valid. However, there is another idea of the holy, the personal individualistic holiness, in which the human personality, with all its singular greatness and beauty, participate. This is the holiness of the morning. Baker, the Gita. This is the holiness which discriminates, the holiness which sees individuals. In each individual is a world for himself. It is the holiness which does not look upon the world as a one black, formless mass, but is a colorful world full of sun, joy, and individual freedom, and individual greatness. This is the holiness of the morning, when the world emerges from the nightly anonymity into the individuated, distinct morphological existence. As far as this holiness is concerned, the crowd is far below the individual. Each person is consecrated to a unique task that only he can perform. I believe that if you... As a matter of fact, Gerus is not a popular subject now, with its two basic performances or acts, Mille and Ville, symbolically represent the two dimensions of the universal community-rooted concept of Duche and the individual concept of Duche. The convert must attain both aspects. The community-rooted social Duche as well as the individualistic, personalistic Duche. The Mille circumcision unites the convert with the community, with the people or nation. Through Mille, the girl becomes integrated into the community. Basically, Mille is the sign of identity. Will you stop fooling around and sit down? Sit down and listen. The Mille unites the girl with the community, with the people or nation. Through Mille, the girl becomes integrated into the community, and by so doing, is given the opportunity to draw upon the communal social resources of Duche and to be a component part of the community. However, the personal element of the Duche is still missing. There can be no conversion without the acquisition of Duche at both levels. Therefore, Tvile was introduced. Tvile is indicative of personal commitment. The act of Tvile is inseparably linked up, whoever studied Yevamos once, with Kabbalah's El Mitzvah. You know very well, when does the girl accept Kabbalah El Mitzvah? What is Kabbalah's mitzvah, if not a personal commitment to God? Not to the community, not through the community, but a personal commitment on the part of the convert to God. There the convert and God face each other. The convert commits himself. The personal individual election is attainable only after the girl separates himself from the community for a short time, retreats into isolation, hiding in the water, immersion, and accepts responsibility not as a member of the community. That kind of responsibility. Now I want to add something. It's also important to know. Kirach charged that Moshe and Aaron were power hungry. They intentionally set up a power structure and raised themselves above the congregation. What always angers me is the arrogant word by Kirach. The Lomot is Nasu, our cowardish. This Nasu, you know what in Hebrew is Nasu means? This, the reason, by the New Berchadis, is Nasu Lemer, and Niemler. And the claims are unfounded. Kirach was wrong. He simply did not understand the philosophy of power and leadership that he had to say to God. He identified the exercise of power with kingship. And the community which is subjected to a power structure, he identified as politeia, or as the political community, or as the state. He was wrong in that. This equation of leader and king and the politicization of the relationship between the leader and those whom he leads. This was the equation of leader and king and the relationship between the leader and those who are led. And that is again equated as a political relationship.